Many of them, though, this is a quote, though fit to serve and given posts, went off into retirement and lived at their will, off the peasants in their villages, and quite ruined them. So I began to compel them to service. You remember, in reality, Peter III did just the opposite. He freed them from service. And I wanted to take them away from their villages. Also, I punished officials who judged suits unjustly and who oppressed the people, and I wished to hand them over to the block. And now he was returning, he said, to see how the common people are faring and what oppressions they suffered. In particular, he said, since he was speaking to Cossacks, he promised to restore to them their old autonomy. Lots of interesting aspects of this speech. The ideal of the Tsar, who cares and loves for his people and will crush the nobility who are suppressing and oppressing peasants. The idea that nobles ought to serve, that that's their function, rather than spend time on the estates where they might interfere in peasants' life. And of course, very interestingly, this religious view of the returned Tsar Peter III as a wanderer, sort of like a Christ-like figure whose return will promise deliverance. And note where he says he goes, Constantinople, the heart of the Byzantine world, the source of Russian Christianity, Jerusalem, no less. He never went to any of these places. He made it up. We know this to be a fact, but it's a telling story. And this whole religious dimension, in fact, is very important, for it pervaded the discourse of this movement. Consider one leaflet, for example, written by one of Pugachev's commanders that openly identifies him with Christ and, by the way, Moses. Our Lord Jesus Christ wished through his holy providence to free Russia from the yoke of servile labor. We all know who's brought Russia to this state of hunger and exhaustion, the leaflet goes on. The gentry own the peasants, and though in God's law it's written that the peasants too are God's children, yet they treat them not merely as servants, but as lower than the very dogs with which they hunt rabbits. This sort of sense of Christian egalitarianism, biblical egalitarianism, is very common in peasant rebellions, as you'll see later as well. But soon, the leaflet concludes, like the Israelites, you will be delivered out of bondage. In fact, in general, the language of this movement was rather rich in this, one might describe it as a millenarian language of some final judgment, punishment, deliverance. Evildoers were promised violent retribution. Just to give you one example from one of these manifestos, concerning those who hitherto were gentry, already the assumption they won't be much longer, who hitherto were gentry in their lands and estates, those opponents of our rule, that is Peter III, the ruiners of the peasants, here's what to do. Seize them, punish them, hang them, treat them in the same way that they, having no Christian feeling, oppressed you, the peasants. This was a judgment day, and as such, it also promised a new life. And the manifesto added, with the extermination of these enemies, everyone will be able to enjoy a quiet and peaceful life, which will continue evermore. In all these appeals, there's one idea and one phrase which rings out most strongly. Pugachev, as Peter III, promised people they would be free. In the words of one of the proclamations, as free as the animals on the steppes, without any interference whatsoever. Now, it's interesting that in reading all these proclamations, which she did, Catherine the Great dismissed them with contempt. She said, Pugachev was promising peasants nothing but, in her words, castles in the air. And she was, of course, right. But one shouldn't underestimate the power of such dreams of revenge and deliverance, and above all, perfect freedom to mobilize people. And this wasn't true just in the 1770s, the period I'm describing now. It would be visible during other upheavals throughout the final years of imperial rule. The same notion of absolute freedom and even vengeance would be part of the way many rebels would be inspired to dream of their own castles in the air. Now, in this lecture, I've talked about the discontents that grew out of the lives of lower-class Russians. But it's, as I've suggested, not just the poor who looked at Russian life with discontent, even with anger. And as we'll see next time, even some of the very richest nobles sometimes looked around with dismay at Russia's still oppressive society and still backward culture.